Once again, a warm welcome to everybody, as well as those who are joining us online. But this morning, we have back with us Mr. Sim KT. He is doing a series on pizza. We had the first session last week. Today, he will continue on the series. Before I introduce the topic, let me read a short introduction of Pastor Sim. So, Pastor Sim is a Bible teacher and a writer of our Daily Bread Ministries. He's based in Singapore. He writes for several other ministries as well, so like the Discover series and the Journey Through series devotion. He's also a regular contributor to the Insights for our Daily Bread. So, he has taught Bible in various countries throughout his long journey. He's the author of several books as well, and two new books will be published this year. I think that was last year, the I Am Sayings of the Gospel of John, Journey Through the Series in Thessalonians. So it's our privilege really to have back with us. Today we are continuing our series on Peter. Today's topic is Walk on Water, taken from several passages, primarily from Matthew chapter 14. Verses 22 to 23. So now I hand over the time to our speaker, Pastor Sim. Morning. We are looking at the type of content in a series called Walk on Water. We will discover how that scripture fits together and how it's for the as well. Last week we looked at the three calls of Peter. First call is conversion, second call is call to discipleship, and third call is a call to full-time Christian ministry. And we look at how Jesus taught him to being a full-time fisherman to become true follower of Jesus, and then finally to be full-time person God's work. Jesus called Simon the 12th time, this time to be one of the 12 apostles, capital A, of the 12 disciples, capital D. And we read in Luke chapter 6, verse 13, when morning came, he called his disciples to him, and those 12 of them will be designated apostles. Simon Peter, then onward, now in your accounts concerning the commission of the 12 disciples, Simon's name is always at the top name. This morning, we want to see an episode which showed to us the growth of Peter as a full-time disciple and as an apostle of Jesus Christ. While he was appointed and commissioned as the apostle, capital A and capital B disciple, his faith is still being wounded. There is a need for growth, development, and maturity. So we want to see how Peter grew in his trust and his faith with Jesus. That for many of us, like most of us, our spiritual journey is a journey where we learn to trust Jesus to mature in our faith. This morning, we just want to look at one of the many events in Peter's life that helped him grow in his faith. And this morning, we'll be looking particularly at Matthew chapter 14, verse 22 to 23, as well as the parallel passages that in Mark and John as well. I give you the parallel passages to let you do a comparative study of what actually happened in this particular event. Now, Jesus had fed 5,000 hungry men. If you count the women and the children, we are close to easily 15,000 to 20,000 people. Jesus fed 5,000 hungry men with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And that's what we read in the passage that is just before the passage we're looking at, verse 40, verse 13 onwards. Matthew 14, we read of this miracle of feeding hungry people. And following this miracle, the people wanted to make Jesus their king. If you look at John chapter 6, verse 14, we read that all the people, after the people saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is coming to the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, Jesus recognized the temptation, the danger that he and his disciples are now placed into. And Jesus took preemptive and protective measures to stop this incorrect expectation of who he is as a Messiah, as the king, the coming king to free them from political bondage. And he wants to stop this wrong expectation, and he wants to protect his disciples from these temptations. And what did Jesus do? First, Jesus dispersed the crowd. And then, secondly, he sent the disciples again. We look at Matthew 14, verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. See, Jesus separated his disciples from the crowd. And he's not just sending the crowd away, he also sent the disciples away, making a big physical distance between the crowd and the so that they were not dismayed at the crowd to make him king. Because at this point in time, the disciples who wanted a political Messiah, they had asked to sit on Jesus' right hand and left hand, the positions of honor when Jesus became king. And what is surprising here, or what is not surprising here, is that the disciples did not come to leave. They were enjoying that privilege of being on the right hand and left hand of the king. They did not want to leave, and that's the reason why Jesus made. The word "made" there means he insisted. He insisted that his disciples get into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake. You see what Jesus is doing there? He's making a physical distance between the crowd and his disciples because he wants to quell that expectation that he's the political Messiah. And separating Jesus, separating his disciples from the crowd was his way of protecting his disciples from temptation. And Jesus did the third thing. After all the physical action that he has taken, he did one more thing. He withdrew himself into the mountain. In verse 23, we read that after he had dismissed them, he went up to a mountain by himself to pray. Later that night, he went. See, physical protection is not enough. Jesus went up to the mountain to spend time with the mountain. And I can bet your life, I can bet my life and the life that he said he prayed for himself. Disciples did not want to leave because Jesus ordered them to go. They left reluctantly. They obeyed the Lord unwillingly. And we look at what happened next when they actually obeyed the Lord. In verse 23, later that night, Jesus was there up in the mountain alone. And we read what was happening to the disciples as they took the boat and rowed the boat across to the other side of the lake. The boat was already a considerable distance from the land, affected by the waves because the wind was against it. Now, if you look at Mark 6:47, the parallel passage, we read that the disciples were in their boat in the middle of the lake. Now, at this point in time, they were about 3 or 4 miles away from shore. And Jesus was right up the mountain. What is surprising is that in verse 48, Mark 6, we saw that You were in serious trouble. Rolling back and stopping in the wind and the wind. The disciples were not following. They were going against the wind and the winds. Otherwise, the resistance is always. Now, the disciples could have avoided all this. All they need to do is to turn the boat around and the winds will blow them back to the shore from which they came. Right? If I am the disciples in that boat, and if I'm a seasoned fisherman, I know that I won't be in the wind. I will just turn around, and but then that would mean that I will be disobeying the Lord. Isn't it? Because it is Jesus who asked me to go to the sea. They were in the storm. Understand this. Precisely because they were you know, we think that sometimes if we obey Jesus, our journey will be smooth sailing. But the reality of our life is that it is precisely because we want to obey Jesus that your life becomes miserable, full of challenges and difficulties. You see, this is where our spiritual journey takes the form that we feel that I need to recognize. Obedience to Jesus does not necessarily mean, say, a smooth and easy journey. In fact, many of times, as your life has already demonstrated, obedience to Jesus means that going against the flow from which you will experience past opposition and difficulties. But you and I need to understand there are two kinds of storms in life that we face actually in the journey. There are the storms of selection, but God disciplined us. I think the example of Jonah, you know the story of Jonah, that he was caught in a storm because God disciplined him for not obeying him to go to Nineveh. But there is another kind of storm that you and I need to recognize in our life. It's called the storms of perfection, where God used that difficulties and the challenges to mature us. And it is God's way of building up our faith and our strength. When we are in the place of obedience, like the disciples were at this moment, although we know that they were very reluctant to obey, we need to recognize that when we are in the place of obedience, we are in the safest place. Because it is the Lord who brought you into the storm. When you are in the place of obedience, you are never out of the providential care and the protection of our God. You know, it was Jim Elliot who says that the will of God will not lead you to a place where His grace cannot sustain you. So this is where I think Peter and the rest of the disciples are learning about the things, about the journey of faith. That in life, in our journey of faith, when we obey the Lord, God is there with us. We will never circumstances. Now, the disciples were 3 to 4 miles, I mean, it's about 5 to 6 kilometers away from the shore. And Jesus is still high up in the mountain, which probably is another 1 kilometer, 13 meters. Think about the distance between Jesus up in the mountain, the disciples in the middle of the mountain. Well, we already discovered that even that praying for the praying, praying time with the Father, in all intents and purposes, praying for the disciples, but we are told, look at Mark 6:48. We are told that Jesus saw that they were in serious trouble. This is something that we will pass by and say, okay, Jesus saw. Jesus knows that we are in trouble. Jesus sees. Jesus sees us. He knows the distance. He knows the struggles. And this is why in the scriptures we read, like what the psalmist says to someone who wants to serve the Lord, not just over you.
The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going both harm. And that's what the experience of the disciples the present moment in the middle of the day against the wind and the waves. This is the peace. Considering that this is a distance of 7 to even 10 kilometers, Jesus was a dynamic person to see, isn't it? How far can you see from the mountain? Jesus sees. And this is the encouragement to us that when we go through the storm, we find ourselves in the storm, then rest on several assurances. Plus, Jesus brought you there. Secondly, Jesus is praying for me. Jesus. What is going to happen next is the top thing that top assurance. The world is confidence. Very often, when we are in a storm of life, whether it's a storm of discipline or a storm of protection, we tend to think that we are abandoned by God. And the reality many of us face is when we have a terminal disease, or someone we love has a terminal disease. And going through that difficult time, we think that Jesus has abandoned us altogether. But you need to know the fourth assurance that it can happen. As we look at what happened, that Jesus will come to us. You know, so Jesus will walk the water, so to speak, to come to us in the storm. Isaiah 43 verse 2 says that when you go through deep waters, I will be with you. When you go through the rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. Find your Savior. That's what it is. Welcome to you. Whether it's baby water, whether it's deep waters, rivers of difficulty, going against the flow of the tide and the wind and the rain and the waters, you will not drown. For I will not drown. Now, the disciples took the boat out to the sea at evening time. It's only the they have been fed. Now, they have been fed with 5 loaves and 2 fish, and they have already gathered some of the gathered over. You know, to just send them probably evening time, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. But you know what time evening when they left? 2 hours later, shortly before dawn. At least 2 hours later, maybe maximum 12 hours later, depending on how many times you come. If we take that 6 p.m., they set off to the other side of the lake. Jesus came to them at 6 a.m. 12 hours later. You know, our Lord deliberately let them struggle for 12 hours. He could have snapped his finger and they reached the other side. And yet he let them struggle for 12 hours. What kind of God is that? You see, you and I in our journey of faith needs to be pushed to the limits, to our human limits, to realize that our human limits cannot solve the problem. For the last 12 hours, the disciples were trying their very best using their human strength to fight against the wave. Jesus pushed us to the very end of the human. He made us realize that our human resources will never be enough for the storms of life. And the earlier, the faster that we learn this truth, the faster the deliverance of taking on the realization that when we do all how we need to realize that our human resources, whatever level we are, which we are, the strong we are, will never be enough the storms of our life. We need to depend on them. The question is, how long did the disciples, how long did Peter take to realize that we need to depend? At this point in time, we don't hear them crying out to the Lord. 12 hours of trying to solve problems on their own, not realizing that we can cry out to the Lord. And in verse 25, we read that shortly before dawn, hours later, our Lord Jesus let him struggle. That long, 12 hours. For some of us, we have been struggling the last long time, right? There's no end in all the problems. Maybe there is an end if we just begin to realize that you need to remember. Because you're still trying to be strong, trying to depend on the community. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the way, and that's where we begin to see the grace of God coming. He is not responding to them because they cried out to him. They call out to him because they have thought. And yet Jesus came to them. Jesus walked on the road to the boat. This topic that we talk about is Peter walking in water and Jesus walked on the water. We missed the point that Peter walked on the water. Remember, Jesus walked on water. And he walked on water 3 to 4 miles. It's not 10 meters. From the boat. He walked on water 3 to 4 miles to the boat. We missed that. You know, if you realize that Jesus walked on water, you didn't realize who Jesus was. Because Jesus walking on water, he was doing something that in the Old Testament that God only can do. Walking on water is the prerogative of deity. Because in Job 9:8, God alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. And so here, Jesus walking water is a picture that he is God. God, that he's doing what only God can do. And we miss it. We look at Peter. We miss Christ walking. His statement declaring that he is God. And he's coming to the rescue people. That's the God. That's the Jesus we need. And that's the Jesus we want to be speaking to him. Even through this time. Because what? Next time you are feeling down and up, when you overwhelm the waves, tell yourself, Jesus walked on water. Not Peter walked on the water, then wrong focus. Now, again, 7 to 8 of the disciples were actually fishermen by trade, by profession. So therefore, they are seasoned fishermen. They have spent all their adult life and perhaps their younger, their childhood, as an apprentice to the parents of someone else. Because in those days, these traits are all by apprenticeship. So in many sense of the word, 7 to 8 is of the disciples who were actually people of the sea. They were professional fishermen. They have spent all their life in this lake. So they know the lake at the back of their hand. And we can conclude that they were not afraid of storms because they would have faced storms so often in the fish. But they were afraid. Whilst they were not afraid of the storm, because that's why they are still struggling. They are not afraid of the storm. They think they can, as seasoned fishermen, they can resolve the wind. Right? That's why they have not turned around after 12 hours. But yet, they were afraid of seeing a man watching the water. That's what they were afraid of. They were not afraid of the storm. They were afraid of a man looking at water. Maybe this is the first time that they are seeing a thing like that. And as I said, it is not Jesus walking 10 meters. Jesus has walked almost 5 to 6 kilometers to them. In verse 26, when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. They were not terrified of the storms. They were terrified of a man walking in water. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. It is Matthew's way of emphasizing how terrified they were. It's a double terror for them. They did not recognize Jesus, obviously. Perhaps because of the wind and the storm, the rain and that, visibility is poor when there's a big thunderstorm. Perhaps that's the reason. But I want to suggest to you that they did not recognize it was Jesus because they had not expected Jesus to turn up. Because they had not called on him to turn up. You know, this is where you and I recognize that God surprises us, especially when we don't pray. He comes to our rescue despite our prayerlessness. And we are shocked because he turned up uninvited. And that's what exactly happened. Jesus turned up uninvited in lives. And very often you realize that Jesus comes in your life uninvited. They were not looking for him. That's why they didn't have the mention. Perhaps it's the rain, yes. Primarily, they were not expecting to see Jesus because they did not look for him and they had not expected him to turn up. In verse 21, but immediately Jesus said to them, take courage, you will find it. Don't not. It is I. The Greek there is ego in you, which is actually the Greek translation of I am. I am who I am. And you know that in Exodus 3 verse 14, that I am who I am is what's divine me. I invited Jesus to turn up in the middle of the lake, telling his disciples, ego in you. As if looking that 6 kilometers of water is not good enough. If they knew the Old Testament, they already knew that Jesus is doing something only God can do. And here now a double proclamation that he's God, I am. Because he is the great I am, there is no reason to question. Just as he has come to the rescue of the Israelites, the slaves in Egypt, he has come to the rescue. He has come to the deliverance. Mind you, this is not the first time that they have experienced storm in the lake, in the Sea of Galilee. Earlier in Matthew chapter 8, verse 27, actually they experienced one storm. You look at it in a short while, and now this Matthew 14 is a record of another storm that they encountered. You compare the two storms in that, because the two storms represent that journey of faith. In the earlier storm, in Matthew 8, Jesus was in the boat with them. In fact, Jesus was sleeping. But now, in this storm, in Matthew 14, Jesus is not in the boat. In contrast, let me suggest to you that through the two storms, Jesus is going to them, telling them that they need to trust him, even if he's not physically present. You see, we think of this that, oh, if Jesus is me, I trust him. But what if you don't feel that Jesus is you? Who do you trust? In yourself. That's what's happening in yourself, in your own abilities. And Jesus corrected this conception. If we have to grow and progress in our spiritual life, and Peter is learning that, regardless of whether you feel Jesus present or not, he is present. He sees you. You can trust him. Okay? So we see right from the very beginning. Hey, right from the beginning, we need to see that the story of Peter walking on water is the story of Jesus walking on the first. Now we look at the implication of Jesus walking on water on Peter. You see, whenever we think about Peter walking on water, we automatically look at his failure, right? First thing come my Peter walk on water, he sunk. He's a failure. After all, it was Jesus who scolded him. You are Peter faith, right? And then we scold everybody for not walking on water. You make faith. And just exactly, we change. You are Peter faith. You are Peter faith. We concluded that many of us, if we don't walk on water before he sunk, we are committed. We are being unfair to Peter. If you look carefully at the whole picture of what's happening in the group, 12 men struggling against the wind, we see that Peter is actually a man of faith compared to all the other 11 disciples. In the darkness, because it's night time, and then the last 12 hours or so, in the midst of the strong winds and the raging water, Peter showed that he actually had faith in Jesus Christ. Because in verse 28, recognizing that that man there walking on water, 5-10 meters away from the boat, Peter shouted, "If it is you, Lord, if you are that man in the walking on water," Peter was like, "Tell me to come to you." And so Peter now exercised some faith, while the rest of the disciples remain in the safety of the boat. Peter dared to be slightly different. Maybe he's reckless, right? Some scholars say that Peter was impulsive, overconfident, and was trying to show off that he's braver than the rest of his other 11 friends. But Peter was foolish to walk out of the boat with Jesus. I don't think Peter is so stupid. As a seasoned fisherman, he spent his entire adult life in the sea of Galilee. He knew that men can float. When you swim, you can float. One of the first things that in swimming class they teach you is how to float. That's all they teach you, how to swim. So he knew that men can float, and then he knew that men can swim in water. He also knew that no man has ever walked. In all his adult life as a fisherman, he has seen no one. He himself knows that he cannot. And he knew that the moment you step out of the boat, if you don't float, learn how to, you don't pretend to float, you sink. That's common knowledge. And there are strong winds, raging winds. It will throw you off guard the moment you step out. You probably step out, you sink, and then perhaps you are swept away to the second. The boat is. That is what Peter understood. And therefore, he must have known that the safest place is to remain in the boat. And yet, he says he wants to be healed. Jesus did not disapprove of Peter wanting to walk in the boat. In fact, Jesus encouraged him to. We look at verse 29. He said, "Because what now?" inheritance. We see this, I see how people see this as the faith. We see that if it is me, take this living faith. People say, come, take this to me. And people did. If Peter's motive is wrong, then they want to show how, that which thing, then we have heard many a time, Peter wanted to show off that he's stronger than the devil. If Jesus is again encouraging showing off, because he is Jesus. I want to make you see that he is Jesus who is inviting him to pray, not to show off. If Peter's motive is wrong, I think Jesus will stop him and say, you stay in the boat. Don't come out. Anyone can sit in the boat and watch in the safety of the boat. Whatever it is, the boat is still the safest place to be in. The other alternative is out there in the water. Anybody can sit in the boat and watch. Person of some faith, and in many sense of the word, strong faith to leave the boat, step out into the water. You know, when I was feeling in my knee, we used to do this flying fox and jump on 30 story high building, right? 30 story high tower, I think, jump, hoping that the safety net below can catch you. You know, it takes a lot of courage to back it up. You don't really need to try. It takes a lot of courage to step out of safety into the zone. Like, although you know that there is a safety net below, okay, but a 13 meter, a 3 story, a 4 story job is something that you and I will not play around with. I took a lot of courage just to step on the safety of the company. Even though I know there is a safety, touch you. And that's what exactly Peter is doing. He's out of the safety of the boat and then he's taken to be under the Lord. And many a times, we are caught in that situation. When we say, Lord, if you only take one, isn't it? You are at a crossroads, right? And you're coming to the decision whether to go step on that or not. Then, after praying and after seeking counsel, you say, Lord, if you take that. That's a big one happen. Something else happen. I'm underlying the word when you see the beginning of faith and the beginning of sin. So it was nothing wrong with people's going to be able to walk. It was actually walking towards Jesus. And we almost reached Jesus. Almost. And I can only imagine Jesus walking. And suddenly he realized that he's in a dangerous water. The winds were beating against him. The waves were probably, making him unstable now. He looked at his circumstances instead of Christ. Mind you, the circumstances have not changed. It's the same set of circumstances for the last 12 hours or so. The strong winds and the raging waters have been there all the time. And yet, suddenly, Peter begin to realize how dangerous it is. And he began to sing. The moment he took his eyes off Jesus, he began to And Peter and Jesus rebuked Peter. You are Peter's faith. It is at this point that the rebuke came. Not that Peter wanted to walk. Peter trying to walk on water, failing to walk. In the last stretch of that walk, last stretch is almost near to the Lord will be can be seen. And you are Peter came, you need to continue. The word not there is neither hesitation, uncertainty. Peter started to come out with the measure of strong faith. And that's one more thing that we need to learn from Peter. Peter knew that we were sinking. He knew that we were sinking. He took his eyes off the Lord, but he knew that. And Peter could have tried to save himself by swimming back to the boat, right? Again, if you are a swimmer and you find that you're in trouble, you try to swim to safety. Right? He could have tried to swim back to the boat, maybe 5 to 6 meters swim, or he could have called out to the other disciples to throw him a lifeline at the boat, right? And that's how you save people who are drowning. You throw a lifeline, you throw a boat, and you try to catch the boat. Peter could have done that, tried to swim back to the boat, like his fellow 11 disciples there to pull him. He didn't. In the last 12 hours, but in that moment, walking on water and sinking, he called to the Lord. He could have talked to the Lord 12 hours earlier. Peter did the right thing. Suddenly he realized that he has failed his sinking. Instead of now calling for human help, and he looked at me, Lord, save me. What? Isn't that the price of mission? You see, most of us, like Peter, take praying to Jesus, asking for Jesus to help as a last resort. But it should have been the first thing that we did. This comfort. What is good about this account is that it looked for humanity. The moment the prayer went up, help came immediately. Immediately, people reached out and helped him. Finally, the chunk of this. You know, sometimes while we know that Jesus, God knows the circumstances, God sees, and sometimes He comes close to us, telling us that He's nearby, He's near, or He's present. He doesn't help us until we connect. And I think that is how I think people learn that lesson. Problem is that it takes 12 hours to get. Very often we start the story here with the end of the story. Our lesson is not yet complete because there are some more lessons. We must see what Peter did next. Peter stopped sinking after Jesus reached out to him. He stopped sinking. Peter did not drown. And I can imagine that Peter to continue to walk towards Jesus. And then, with Jesus holding his hand, That's only the continuation of the story that we need to see. That together with Jesus, we walk back to the boat. But I'm pretty sure that Peter now holds Jesus' hand very tight. Better don't let go the moment he let go and see. Verse 32, they climbed onto the boat. That moment, wind died. We miss the miracle here. We think that the miracle is that, you know, Peter was saved, which it is, but we miss this miracle. Some song that we miss. I guess Peter, if you do this time, he probably will be sitting next to the boat. Christ is not in the vessel. Back to Matthew 28, where Christ is in the boat. See, this story of Peter walking on water is not to embarrass Peter, but rather it is to show us that this is the kind of faith that Peter and the world needs. That in the storms of life, it may not be easy. The storms of life are necessary for the development and maturity of our faith. Like Peter, we need to learn to trust Jesus early enough. Like Peter and the disciples, we need to obey Jesus no matter what the circumstances. If we want to live our faith, we need to fix our eyes on Jesus. That's where the failure is. We do not need to keep the students of the school. So, catch us. And it comes about when we that will be good to criticize the next phase. Peter had more faith than you and I. Peter had more faith than the 11 disciples. Because at the end of the day, although Jesus told him for having little faith, he really understands little faith is better than little. Isn't it? The other disciples sat in the boat and watched. Peter exercised whatever little faith that he had to walk in. And because he took that step of faith, stepping out of the boat into the water, his faith was refined and his faith was strengthened. This is something that you may need to understand, that if you don't step out in faith, your faith will not be refined. You will not progress. You will not be able to see the maturing process in your life and in faith. There is a time where you just need to step up into the world. This is the picture of all of us. Because Peter's story is a story. Very often we find ourselves in the storm because we are within the things. This is the storm of the world. We need a little faith and we need a little concern and fear. Jesus sees us. Remember, Jesus sees you. And then you can actually hear Jesus says, come. Even if it means we look at verse 33. You know, Peter's story has not ended yet. It ends with 33. This is not the first time that the disciples have experienced a storm in life, in the Sea of Galilee. In Matthew 8 23, we read of another earlier account. But as I told you earlier, Jesus is in the boat sleeping with them. And the disciples in verse 25 went and woke him up and said, Lord, save us, we are going to drown. You see, earlier they did ask Jesus to save them very early in the storm. The moment they hit the storm, they quit Jesus up and say, "Please save us." Perhaps it's because Jesus was in the midst. Jesus was physically present. So it was a constant reminder that we need to. And in verse 26, he's quoted the disciples again, "You are little faith. Why are you so afraid?" And of course, then Jesus looked up and hit the storm. There was the storm. In verse 27, in this episode in Matthew 28, the man was amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this?" That woman, they haven't reached the full compassion of Jesus before. What kind of man? Jesus is a man who is able to perform miracles. What kind of man can command the winds? And that he was left as a question mark. What kind of man is this? In this storm, the disciples asked questions about whether Jesus now then Jesus. They were amazed, but there was no worship because they had not come to the conclusion that he is God. But in Matthew 14, it was a slightly different conclusion. In verse 33, then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, there is a progression of faith happening between the two storms." What kind of man? In Matthew 14, there is no doubt that Jesus is not just a man. He is a son of God. They give him the worship. Because they now realize that the man who you and I need to come in our journey of faith to the storm of life. Okay? What kind of man is say that we will come? As I said, the story of Peter walking on water is not Peter walking on water. It's God, because that is what only God can do, walking on water. Are you caught in the storm of life today? Strong winds, raging waves, and you've been struggling for a long time. And you wonder whether it's Jesus. Clearly, Jesus is not in court. Know this, Jesus is praying for you. Jesus sees you in the struggle. We may not see Jesus in the dark. We may not be able to see Jesus because now the eyes are crowded with problems, emotions. It doesn't matter. Jesus sees you. What is important is Jesus sees you. And third, Jesus will come to you in the storm. And invited. If you don't. Whatever period that you have been struggling with, you have to start to stop in front of you. As I say, the disciples were not calling out to Jesus in the first words. They were trying to solve their own problems. They could have called out, as in the first episode, in Matthew 8, "Wake up, Jesus," so to speak. Tell Jesus that you need. It's not that Jesus doesn't know. It's that so that we feel to tell you. You need to call on him, "Lord, save me." Then we need to realize that the storm that we face is to nurture us. As I said earlier, you need to distinguish between the storm of correction and the storm of protection. If it's a storm of correction, like Jonah, you need to repent. If it's a storm of perfection, you need to rejoice because you are being refined. Then you learn to worship James is that when troubles come your way, he is watching you. What's the thing you think? Let it grow. But when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete. Thank you. I guess yeah, being perfect. No matter whether you say you have little faith or no faith, whatever faith you waver, you are being perfect. Trust in the outcome that God intended for you in your life. You and I must understand that we cannot walk on water. The story of Peter walking on water is not that we can walk on water. We can't. But rather, you need to see the event that Jesus can walk on water. He's God. He's only doing what God can do. God, if it is you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you. It is on the basis that Jesus can walk on water with me. They have to step up in faith. But as you hear Jesus call you to come, you jump to the stick. Keep your eyes on you, not on the circumstances. Because the circumstances can change. We trust that Jesus will bring us to the end. We trust in the power. We trust in the protection of Jesus. We trust in the presence of Jesus. And we trust in the promise that we will come. That's the lesson of people working. Indeed, no one saying what kind of name is the son of God.